We are going to continue our meeting with a discussion on operating segments, IFRS 8. I give the floor to
Nadia.
Good afternoon, everyone. The board published the exposure draft of proposed amendments to IFRS 8 operating segments in March 2017. The objective of today's meeting is to discuss the feedback of the exposure draft with the board. The discussion should enable the board to have sufficient information on the feedback on the proposal. This information, in turn, should enable the board's decision on the future direction of the project at a future meeting. That's our ultimate objective. We have three papers for the meeting today. Paper 27A describes the history of IFRS 8. This paper is provided for information only and sets out the background of IFRS 8. We do not plan to discuss this paper today. Paper 27B summarizes the feedback that the board received in response to the exposure draft of proposed amendments to IFRS 8. Paper 27C sets out areas that we currently envisage will require further analysis by the board. We will later start our discussion with paper 27B, the feedback summary. In summary, the feedback to the exposure draft was mixed. Investors supported the proposal, but think that the board should have gone much further in its proposed analysis. Regulators overall support the proposal, but want more guidance on pretty much on the proposal. Preparers, national standard setters, accounting associations, and audit firms have mixed views and are concerned that the cost of implementation of the proposal will outweigh the benefits. The paper 27B analyzes feedback for each of the proposals in the exposure draft, nine in total. Question one on page 14 of paper 27B asks whether board members have any questions or comments about the feedback summarized in this paper. I'll carry on talking about paper 27C because as we go through the discussions, there might be some overlap in board members' responses. Paper 27C goes beyond traditional feedback summary. In this paper, we summarize areas which we think the board might want to consider in finalizing the proposals from the exposure draft. It's our tentative thinking and like where we think some further analysis might be required. And question one on page 5 asks the same question, whether board members have any questions or comments about the areas that we have identified for further analysis. At this stage, I would like to pause and because Neely would like to say a few words about IFRS 8 and segment reporting in general.
Thanks, Nadia. I wanted to highlight just one point with respect to some developments since the PIR occurred in 2012. There have been some developments in the U.S. that I thought might just inform your decision about what to do with the mixed feedback that Nadia is referring to from all of the constituents. You might be aware that IFRS 8 is a converged standard with the US GAAP, so I think that some of that experience might be relevant in how you decide to proceed. But what happened in the US is that the FASB's trustees did a PIR on the equivalent to segment reporting requirements in US GAAP. And in 2014, the FASB decided not to take on a segment reporting project onto its agenda. But they did note that there was a significant amount of regulatory effort that went into enforcing the segment standard. So for that reason, as well as some other reasons, what happened was that the SEC staff went back to US GAAP and took a hard look and a hard think at how it was applying and the expectations it had of companies applying the US GAAP equivalent of IFRS 8. And there were a number of learnings from that experience that speak to the very same things that we're seeing here with the post-implementation review. So specifically, identification of operating segments, and as part of that is the identification of the chief operating decision maker, and also aggregation. And the SEC staff has been very public over the last couple of years about what its specific expectations are in applying the standard and in getting consistency among the U.S. registrants in applying that standard. So just wanted to mention that to keep in the back of your minds that there have been developments since 2012 that might inform what to do next with this feedback.
Thank you, Neely. We'll definitely consider your experience as we progress with this project. So, I outlined papers 27B and papers 27C. And I think at this stage, we're now ready to start our discussions. And once we discuss all your comments, the team will go back and analyze all your responses and comments, and I'm sure they will help us in developing our proposals for the future direction of this project, which we plan to bring to you at the future meeting. Do you have any comments for papers 27B and 27C?
It's hard to know where to start, isn't it? Maybe just a few observations in no particular order of importance. So some of the feedback that we got on the classifications we tried to make to identification of the CODM and the sort of confusion that we seemed to inadvertently create about what types of decisions sort of matter, if you like, the sort of decision-maker you're looking for, if you like, when you're identifying the CODM. I just wonder how unique that is in our standards. And one thing I wondered about looking at, and I've done no more than flick to IFRS 10 to remember what the words are, so I've done no analysis beyond that, so it might be a stupid idea, but just wonder if it's worth checking. I think our control definition used to refer to particular types of decisions being the ones that somebody had to have power over to have control. So I was going to have a look and see what those decisions were. When I did that today, I remembered that I had forgotten we had changed that emphasis to looking at relevant activities. So having power over the relevant activities, which are the activities that really matter in terms of influencing what the return of the entity would be. And I wonder whether having a look at that and reminding ourselves why we went to that approach, we could consider whether that would make more sense in terms of describing the particular decisions which we went away from in IFRS 10. I think the other thing I just wanted to, two more things. One was the concerns that some people raised about our proposal to require people to talk about whether or not the way segments were divided up was similar or different to the approach taken in other documents in the annual reporting package, and the fact that, which we always knew was going to be a bit controversial, and we knew we were pushing the envelope a little bit. We knew that. I continue to still think it's a good idea because it seems that one of the key concerns that investors have about the management approach is being really confident this truly is the management perspective. And when they see different management perspectives turning up in different documents, I think their scepticism is increased. So I think that requiring some sort of discipline or at least information about whether or not there is consistency was a good proposal, and I see that there was mixed feedback on it. And I guess I just want to encourage the staff not to, in my view, overreact to the sort of concerns that people raised along the lines of, if you start doing this in this project, when's it ever going to stop? You're always going to be looking beyond the boundaries of the financial statements. I think that this is a bit of a special case because of the management approach and the fact that the, I think, initial expectation would be that you would expect there to be consistent thinking about the management approach across different documents. So I don't think we should be unduly concerned about people saying you shouldn't do that just in case you start doing that all the time. I think we do need to be disciplined in explaining why it might be appropriate here where it may not be otherwise. And I guess for me, the broader question, which I would be interested in a view from staff on in terms of when we go to next steps, thinking about deliberations and what your recommendations might be for next steps. I think we need to make a decision about what the whole purpose of this exercise is, which sounds a bit silly, but I think it's been so long since we did the PIR, and now we've done this exposure draft and we've got comments, that it would be easy to sort of react to the comments on this document and try and address those. And I think we need to decide how hard we want to be wired back to the problems we were trying to solve from the original PIR, or whether because lots of time has moved on we need to think about it differently because there's new information, and also whether because the FASB are now sort of taking a slightly different tack that means we should change our approach. And I think we need to think about that in the context not only of this particular set of decisions, but probably in the context of our attitude to PIRs more generally, because the decisions we make here may give us a steer for how we deal with PIRs going forward. So I think that would be something, from my perspective, that would be helpful to frame the discussion when you come back with the next steps.
I think they are very good points, and I would like to comment on your two points, which is the first one, Proposal 5, about the linkage of information. I personally think it's one of the most substantive proposals in the disclosure draft, and that's the one that investors value, because the proposals in the PI, in the exposure draft were prepared in response to preparers, in response to regulators, in response to investors, and that specific proposal does deal with investors' concerns, and I think it is quite an important one, and we'll definitely look at it very carefully. The second point I would like to make, which is also in response to your, what you just said, I actually think it's a very good point that we should be looking at the package of the proposals and not just, get excited about this or that proposal, because there are so many of them and we just shouldn't lose the big picture. So that's more of an observation than a comment, really, but I think it's a good point.
Daryl?
So a couple of comments. Firstly, on the one we just talked about, the linkage, I also I agree with everything Sue said. I agree with your response. The one additional point that I'd add there is that I was in a couple of conversations in various places about this one, and people got horribly confused about what I was actually trying to do. Mm. So I think it's worth also bearing that in mind. I'm not sure people entirely understood, and we just need to be careful with that. Obviously, the annual reporting package is something different. That's about clarifying. The other point I wanted to make, and I think the clearest example for me was the last sentence in paragraph 17. But there are a couple of spaces in paragraph 17, people talk about whether they thought the board's intent with this change was to lower the level of granularity, in other words, to result in more segments. And I think that's one example where I think people are muddling up a little bit of cause and effect. The effect of us being clearer about what you're supposed to do is probably going to result in more segments. But I think people seem to have got muddled in that, and I think it's worth sort of bearing that in mind. And then a question. Paragraph 48C. Some were concerned that the proposal might open possibilities for disclosure arbitrage. Now, this is in the context of us saying that should you need to provide additional information that would help users understand what you're doing. I didn't understand the comment at all on that one. I'm not sure if there's more color that you can sort of put behind that. Clearly, if we're saying some said this was a few people who were raising the issue of disclosure arbitrage. Do you know what they meant with that?
I think this is quite a common concern, but I think people specifically mean using non-GAAP measures. That's what they mean by disclosure arbitrage. So
are they worried that by introducing additional information into the segmental report, that you'll deliberately introduce confusing information or non?
Like, basically, in simple terms, entities will provide more non-GAAP information. I think that's the concern in simple terms.
That's an odd comment to me in the context of IFRS 8, given that it can be non-GAAP information anyway.
Exactly. I found this a very peculiar...
I took the comment to mean that the non-GAAP measures that sort of push the boundaries, that management isn't using it to run its business, but it's the non-GAAP measures excluding the really bad stuff that we're trying to hide. So is this a way to give cover to making those types of more questionable disclosures acceptable within the financial statements?
Doug?
Thank you. The proposal 5, which is contentious one, and I support this proposal in itself, but again, I heard lots of comments about the possibility of discouraging less information on the annual report or other annual package. Because, for example, currently, the financial information segment is, say, for example, only 4. However, they provide more granular information in the annual reporting package with 15 or 12, something like that, in order to explain their business. But once you said there should be a linkage between the segment annual report and segment report in the financial reporting, some people say most likely preparer would simply reduce the number of segment in the annual report. The reason that they pointed out is because there are some group of segments which may share some common expense or share some common facility. So therefore, if you are to provide some more detailed information in the financial statement, it may take time, and if it were to be audited, it's difficult. So therefore, the best they could do is to provide, to group those segments into four or something, so that they provide the information about four segments financial in the financial statement audited. But in order to make investor understand more about their business, they want to explain the ingredients of these four segments. But if you have somehow kind of constraint, then they feel they have a constraint not to explain too much, which is different from financial statement. So I agree with staff recommendation, but I think, again, explanation is really important. This is not really discouraging the further granular information is annual reporting package, but only the point we want is you have to provide some reconciling point with the financial statement. If you cannot provide some common expense for this segment, detail of segment, then it's fine. However, you have to say up until the revenue line, these are the segments you can provide. So such kind of information is, you know, desperately needed by the investors. So that's what we need to explain in detail in the basis for conclusion or something. That's the point for the proposal five. The other point about is about proposal seven. And I think proposal seven, I agree with a staff recommendation, we should keep this proposal. However, the concern, again, here is, in this proposal, you can provide some information which is not regularly checked by the CODM. And actually, the reason why we added this this constraint is because some preparer use it as an excuse not to provide detailed information which was requested by the investors. So investors often ask, could you provide some more detailed information? But the preparer say, oh, we would be happy to. However, our IFRS 8 prohibits doing that because everything must be checked by the CODM. So that kind of things were used as an excuse. So our intention is to try to remove such an excuse. So therefore, I think this is really necessary to do that. But one thing we have to be careful is it could be used the other way around. I mean, some people could provide so either non-GAAP measurement or either some measurement which was not really checked by the CODM, so it's not really unauthorized document. So that's the only point we have to be careful. But I think it's not very much likely. So therefore, I think I still support our proposal seven.
Thank you,
Amara.
Thanks. So. First of all, thank you very much for the general feedback. It's good to have a general view. I think I agree with many points made by Sue. I mean, I wouldn't expect us to do an overall review of IFRS 8, so remind us ourselves of the objective of PIR inception and the initial feedback that we had that it was working relatively well. And regarding to the particular the proposals, the overall proposal 5 and 7 that Tak just mentioned, I think they are in general aligned with the overall objective of better communication at the end of the day. So I think we should bear in mind what we have under better communication, not to do too much or do too little. Particularly in the proposal 7, that was that is indicated a significant support from investors. You mentioned in paragraph 50, in particular B, and the footnote 19, that a number of responses recommend that the POD project should address this issue centrally for all actors. And I think we should really pay attention to issues that come across in other projects, but could be taken into consideration under the POD. So it's just to stress the point, particularly in this proposal, to really connect with undergoing project and principles of disclosure.
Okay, now Gary.
Thank you. And Nadia, I thought a very good set of papers as well. I think we should take a view as, look, kind of like declare victory. I mean, we did the PIR. We concluded we actually did a good job when we wrote IFRS 8 and was operating pretty well in practice, and we had at the time some lower impact recommendations to do. That's when we got feedback on that. And in general, one of the most common words in here, respondents generally agreed. So I don't think we should be too hard on where we are. I think we're in very, very good shape. And I think any of these things could be clarified perhaps or improved. But at the same time, I think you could arguably make the case is we don't need to do anything either. That there is still a cost about issuing a new standard. There's and so on, our time, constituents' time, reaction time, and adoption time. I don't really support that, but I think the argument can be made. I think we should do some things here, but these are not profound things that need tons and tons of time to do. You know, for example, it was 2009 was the first year IFRS 8 was effective. We've done 8 fiscal year reporting since then, and this year end will be the 9th. It's hard to believe for established IFRS reporting teams, they haven't figured out who their CODM is at this point. Maybe first-time adopters are coming down the line next year might need something, but the lion's share of the world is already there. They have answered the question. And so I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time on that. It's not a finer point of recognition or measurement. It's pick a person or pick your board or whatever it is. I think the aggregation, I think, is probably, if I was going to spend any time in this, I'd probably spend the time sort of in that space. And probably reaffirm the other changes, you know, 7, 8, and 9 that we had suggested. But I think we're in very good shape, and we should not make this a bigger project than it really is.
Okay. Nick?
Yeah, just following up, I think Gary makes a good point. I think most companies have had time to work out who the CODM is by now. I think, however, coming to this cold, I was confused by adding in the phrase operating into the mix. I found that I could see why that created a degree of confusion and ambiguity. On Proposal 5, the controversial issue around linkage, again, when I first saw this, I felt very much in support of the proposal that there should be explanation if there wasn't clear linkage. I'm slightly concerned about the scope of this in terms of if there's, let's say, mention a narrative of some small part of division, if all of a sudden that then creates a problem within this. And I just wonder how tightly we can get that scope down, really, rather than perhaps having unforeseen consequences. More broadly, I'd say that segments is still an area where users aren't altogether satisfied. It comes up time and time again, and it's starting to come up through some of our other feedback into other projects as well. So it's come up through principles of disclosure and so on. And given that the FASB have put this onto their as a project onto their technical agenda, I just wonder whether we need to not hold our work back here, but at some stage we need to think about again having a look at the segments more broadly.
Mary,
I think one of the reminders I had from the set of papers is this was our first PIR, and it's the one where we had to learn how to do a PIR, learn how to do a feedback, learn how to, you know, figure out what we follow up. And so it might be good when the staff comes back to us to just kind of give us a framework that says something, not pages, word, you know, sentences rather than pages, that says, here's kind of the framework, the constraints we're operating in. And this kind of goes back to what Gary was saying, is you know, we did the PIR. We heard it was basically working as expected. So we decided we are not going to reconsider whether or not we have the management approach to, you know, to segment reporting. And I think some of the comments we had in here are maybe from people who would like us to reconsider whether or not we have the management approach to segment identification. So I think, you know, when you bring back the next paper, if it starts with a, remember, this is the context in which we're doing it, we're not reconsidering fundamental issues. I think we also have got to stand back and look at the package that remains after we re-deliberate and say, do we think the benefit of making these changes exceeds the cost of putting a package of changes through the system? And again, this kind of goes to what Gary said. I noted there was one comment that you cited, I guess paragraph 9C, that indicated that one commentator said, we think that the cost exceeds the benefit. Now, I'm not sure if that cost, if there's like one proposal sticking out like a sore thumb, that was most of the cost, and if you modify that one proposal, the cost benefit equation might change. So that's maybe something to think about, because I think we have to ask ourselves that question as well. Yes, these are all improvements that can be made, but have we worked out the cost benefit when we think of translation and endorsement of any amendments to a standard, in terms of what the system gets out of it? A couple of other things that I want to think about in the context in particular of I4S8, which is, if there are compliance problems, then we shouldn't necessarily undertake standard setting to address the compliance problems unless the compliance problems tie back to ambiguity or, you know, conflicts in the standard. And again, to the extent that some of the issues that people are citing are compliance problems, let's think about whether we really need to be the ones to respond. And an example of that may or may not be the chief operating decision maker. Yes, people have had 8 years to determine who they identify as the CODM. I guess the question is whether we are generally, what we've heard back from the PIR, whether we generally are comfortable that the right CODM is being identified. And if we have heard concerns that there's widespread problems in getting to the right CODM, is this compliance or is it standard setting, and we have to provide some more guidance? I would work through that question that way. The other thing I've seen as I look at a couple of the proposals, again, kind of standing back and thinking about it, there seems to be at least one, if not two, places in which we proposed a disclosure requirement almost as a discipline, rather than because we actually think the disclosure itself will specifically provide information that users will use. And maybe we should challenge ourselves again about whether we do that kind of on a routine basis, or whether that's something we really only do in exceptional circumstances where we rely on public scrutiny to improve behavior. Because I'm not, for example, sure that disclosing the identity of the CODM gives users that much more information that they can actually use, as opposed to us seeing it as kind of an indirect, relatively low-cost enforcement mechanism. Mm-hmm. So I think I would challenge ourselves on that. And then the last thing is on this annual reporting package. This kind of fits in with the compliance point, but I think that there's a very strong message that we probably want to send that is, if we have gone with the management, haven't gone with the management approach, that it certainly would raise questions for me if you see management approaching the entity in two different ways, in two different pieces of kind of the same reporting package. But I understand the concerns about going beyond what I'll call the annual report, although in some jurisdictions the annual report, if it has a David was talking in the last session about the OFR in the UK, some kind of management commentary, MD&A, OFR, that may or may not be published literally with the annual report. I would certainly consider that part of the annual report, even if not published in the same document. But I can understand the concerns about starting to expand to preliminary results review, and where do you cut that off? Because is it basically that you have to consider every piece of information that's posted on an entity's website? And that's where I see some reasonable pushback from the comments. So I don't want to give up some of the notions that underlie Proposal 5, but maybe we think about how broadly we define that. And so that's something that I'd say to you to perhaps think about in that context. But again, I'd come back to, is it a compliance problem or is it a problem with the drafting of the standard and not kind of trying to use disclosure as a discipline, but rather disclosure because we think the information itself is relevant. And last, just something Nick mentioned about the FASB, I think their project, again, is pretty narrow and targeted. I don't think we can agree a package of changes and say in 2 or 3 years, you know, if we think that's when the FASB is done, we'll go back and look again at making another round of changes. I think we either have to decide to try and get the timing aligned to at least be able to consider tentative views, or say we have to make a decision independently, because multiple rounds of changes on the same standard or not, I think that fails the cost-benefit test.
Martin.
Now only a small comment, because some of the comments indicate, okay, that we should do additional things about these amendments. I think it is coming from the PIR, and I think we should stick to the issues raised in the PIR and not now have a scope wider than, okay, we have done in the PIR. And therefore, I think if you give staff kind of what should be working on, I think it is really on these specific items and not really broaden the scope of that. And even if also with the CODM, I think we tried to help because the question was okay, but if the answer is okay that all is not helpful, we should forget it. Because I think this approach, as Gary also said, if you after 8 years not identify where CODM is, I think you will never identify it, and even with more guidance, right? And therefore, I think we should not take too much time now on trying to solve this kind of question, which I think is a judgmental question always. And if you try to make it right or wrong, I think it's more an enforcement issue.
Gary?
Yeah, quickly. Just reacting to something Mary had said about the CODM, we identify the right person. In order for someone to be disclosed as the CODM, that person, or keep a person out of function, has to agree to that. And there is nothing in it for someone to agree to be the CODM if you're in fact not. And that brings all sorts of trouble. You're probably not paid the right amount, everything else. I'm just not too concerned, about it. And I think, Martin's right, I think something we should move quickly through these, and arguably including perhaps really doing nothing.
If I could maybe respond to two comments. One, in terms of the CODM, I think the challenge is actually if the CODM believes he or she is the CODM, when their boss thinks they're the CODM, that's when it becomes a slightly political issue or sensitive issue. But that aside, you see often in practice that companies with acquisitions and divestitures, they're constantly reorganizing their structure. So even though a standard may have been applicable for 8 years, they need to go back and revisit their application of the standard because something in how their business is run has changed. So the question of who is the CODM, what are the operating segments, what's the aggregation, it doesn't ever go away. So and the standard in the U.S. has been in existence for almost 20 years now, and it's a constant question about whether it's being correctly applied because of these regular changes that we see at companies.
Well, the aggregation is a big issue because, right, companies are reorganizing, and a lot of it has to do with the personalities, the executives there, not necessarily the logic of the product lines or whatever. I think in the U.S. it's pretty largely defined for you who the CEO is or the CODM. So I don't think that's the case globally, but who's signing your 302 and 906 certifications? You've identified the person. But I just don't think, again, putting the U.S. aside, because it is pretty precise, I think you need two people to agree to be the CODM, the one who wants to label it and the one who's being labeled, and kind of like a contract. And I don't think there's a lot in it for you to be labeled a CODM if you don't in fact feel you are.
Yeah. I think we have to wrap up this project in light of what we set out to do, which was responding to a PIR. Some of the feedback suggests that the things we proposed haven't been helpful, so it may be that we don't proceed on some of those, but I think we look at what we suggested in the light of the PIR, what feedback we've got, and then we wrap it up. I am very interested in what the US is looking at, FASB's looking at, with its possible additional disclosures on the standard, but it wouldn't, I don't, wouldn't support us holding up, wrapping up this in light of that. I think it's very interesting when they talk about the potential additional disclosures, because it would appear to me that they're responding, I'm speculating, they're responding to requests for additional information on this style of standard. And that will be relevant to us because it's a converged standard, but I don't think we should wait on this to think about that.
Yes, quickly, and we're going back, we're working after the PIR and before the exposure draft. We, in fact, processed, do these things result in divergence or something? I think the conclusion was, no, these are completely consistent with convergence, doesn't change anything. You know, there are clarifications, you know, refinements and stuff, but we do not diverge as a result of what's in the ED, whether we adopt the recommendation as it was written or choose to do nothing. I think we stay as converged after that as we are today.
Okay, changes. One of the challenges, though, that you have in practice is that even though the words are the same, it is being applied differently overseas versus in the U.S., specific to that CODM point. So, and maybe this goes back, Mary, to your point, is that a compliance issue, or is it something in the words that need to be clarified? But there is diversity there.
I would also like to echo what Anne just said about the FASB's project. I would like to pre-warn the board that, as the paper says, the project has just commenced at FASB. It just started in September. So it's very, very early stages we're talking about. And the question is how much longer we're prepared to wait. Yeah. So it just something to consider as well when people think about FASB's ideas.
Yeah, Tom?
Two things. Just a small comment about five. I use the word granular as TAC does. I think it's important that if we do that one, that we phrase it such that we don't discourage granular. And I think that can be done. But, and I'd also even be concerned, again, kind of when I've casually gone and looked, a lot of entities seem to match up perfectly in their management commentary and their segment reporting. Others will do a more granular. They may take the segment and split it into three divisions or something. To me, this is consistent with what's in segment reporting. It's just more detailed. So when people say it's not the same, I'm always a little bit worried. They say, oh, these guys showed, you know, 19 divisions in the management commentary, and there were five. But if they're all just subsets, I think that can be taken care of in wording. Yeah. If we choose to do it, we have to word it very carefully to avoid what TAC's concerned about. That was one comment. And then I have a question for Mary. If FASB's working away, just you expressed concern that we not do something twice. If you just what based on this, like kind of where if we finalize this and FASB move along expeditiously and have something out in 2 years, like do you see that as a big problem?
I really have significant questions about revising I4S 8 in 2018 and opening it up again in 2020 to consider another couple of tweaks or tuning. You know, it's just generically, let's avoid having our standards being in perpetual modification, especially when you multiply it by the translation and endorsement, which actually kind of tees up the reason I put up my card was to respond to something Anne said, which is let's wrap up our PIR. Especially if we decide to eliminate some of the things we proposed, I think we have to stand back again and say, even if we think that what remains are improvements, is it worth going ahead and making the changes, or do we wrap up the project by saying, these are good ideas, but what was the other project? in primary financial statements where the interpretation committee said, here's a suggestion we have for defining what was it financing, but we don't think we're going to do it now, so let's park it until the board comes, as we started to in the last discussion we had, consideration of issues where we pick up a suggestion. I think when we work our way through the different proposals and decide what's in our package of final proposals, we have to stop and say, for the degree of improvement that they yield, is it worth opening up IFRS 8 and making changes, or do we expeditiously wrap up the project by saying, we've decided we're not going to make any changes at this time, and not throw them away and say they were bad ideas, but just say the cost of making changes doesn't warrant making this. I haven't reached the it's not worth doing conclusion, but I think as soon as we start taking out, if we think about taking out some pieces of a package of relatively small changes, we have to ask ourselves that question again.
It's a very good point, and something that you started considering.
We don't have to make a change for this project to be a success.
As okay. Pierre said,
All right. Well, I suggest we take a break till 4 o'clock, and then we bring the day to a joyous end with dynamic risk management.
You are ambitious.